mitigate those injuries is to allow the workers to unionize. Yep. That's what they said. So with that, we will have to leave it there. You have been listening to Labor Radio. I am Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Elliot Gilland.
If you want to continue this conversation, you can find me on Twitter at Michael B. Cath.
Just making your way home to you, the all-night driver out in your cab alone. To you waiting for lunch break as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up. It's Labor Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Get Kids Outdoors Dinner on Friday, October 25th from 6 to 9 p.m. at EcoTrust in Portland. The Get Kids Outdoors Dinner supports Betty's 360 and Urban Nature Partners, two youth mentoring organizations that look to create more equitable access to the outdoors for historically marginalized communities in Portland. There will be dinner, drinks, silent auctions, raffles, and the opportunity to learn more about both organizations. Again, that's the Get Kids Outdoors Dinner on Friday, October 25th from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Billy Frank Jr. Conference Center at EcoTrust, 721 Northwest 9th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Opioid overdose is a leading cause of death for people releasing from prison. A new pilot program at Coffee Creek Correctional Facility, Oregon's only women's prison, begins treatment for women diagnosed with opioid use disorder prior to their release from prison and connects them to community-based treatment upon release. Join me on Prison Pipeline to learn more about this innovative program to reduce overdose deaths for women releasing from Coffee Creek. That's Prison Pipeline, October 28th at 6:30 p.m.
Prison Pipeline is a radio program dedicated to educating the public about the Oregon criminal justice system. Topics include incarceration and reentry, addictions and mental health, elections and laws, victims' rights, and criminal justice reform. The program presents a unique understanding of the criminal justice system, addresses the root causes of crime, and challenges the status quo. It seeks to promote awareness and activism in order to foster a safer, healthier, and more just society.
Prison Pipeline airs on Monday evenings from 6:30 to 7 p.m. on KBOO Portland. Check us out every week. If you miss an episode, you can stream it later. Just go to kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. More info about upcoming shows and events related to the prison community can be found on our Facebook page, Prison Pipeline. Be sure to like us.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
Good evening. This is Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. I'm your host, Isabel Sinclair, and tonight I'm here with guest Joshua Wright to discuss a little bit of the work that he's done both during incarceration and afterwards. Joshua, welcome.
Thank you.
And before we begin, let me start with the illustrious titles that follow your name with all of the work that you've done. Joshua is currently both a Living Yoga volunteer and instructor. He is on the strategy team for the Metropolitan Alliance for the Common Good. He's the co-founder of Liberation Literacy, president of the board of Phoenix Rising Transitions, and co-creator and namer of All Rise magazine. Did I get it, Joshua?
Yeah, that's all of it. That's my five jobs.
So I'm wondering, actually, before we go into anything relating specifically to this work, mm-hmm. when you and I were talking just briefly before this, you mentioned something that I think was really enlightening and could be enlightening to our audience, mm-hmm. and that was about the connotations associated with the words we use to refer to people who are currently in the prison system. Would you be willing to share what you had told me?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, in this work, a lot of people use the terms of inmate as well as incarcerated people. And we had a long discussion while I was doing time shortly before release about those terms and what they kind of feel like if you're coming from them. And inmate, we agreed, implies that there's a defect, like you're an inmate at a hospital. There's something wrong with you. You know, that's why you're there. And incarceration is similar. You have to be held in a place because something's wrong. But we agreed that prisoner and imprisoned is more accurate in terms of the feeling associated with it, because that implies that you're there against your will. It doesn't necessarily mean there's something wrong with you. It just means you are in prison by an outside force.
So if I'm understanding that correctly, even the term incarcerated individual reflects back on somebody's, like, a personal fault, and so it's preferred to really focus on the fact that somebody's imprisoned.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you for that.
Of course.
So I'm wondering if you'd be willing to share a little bit what you did with your time when you were incarcerated, or when you were imprisoned, rather, at CRCI, or Columbia River Correctional Institution.
Absolutely. So I started my first year kind of like getting a lay of the land and figuring out how things work, because I'd never even been arrested before that. And all the just associated prison politics and how you have to operate in that environment and what you have to, who you should talk to and who you shouldn't, and all things related to that. And so the first year was mainly spent doing that, getting involved in a couple classes just that were offered that I found interest in. Inside Out College course in particular, I remember. I became an education tutor, so I tried to teach people to get their GEDs and while they were doing time, but they were forced into that program, so it wasn't that good of a job, because it was like we both almost didn't want to be there at sometimes. And then, you know, the second year I spent kind of growing in the classes I was taking and becoming more respected in different roles that were appointed to me by both prisoners and staff. And my third year, I got to try to start programs themselves. Liberation Literacy was one of them. All Rise Magazine was started around that time as well by, like, I think seven of us. It might be five nowadays, but... We started that on my third year as well, and my fourth year was kind of like I was appointed to run talent shows and other things by different classes and programs that I'd been a long time attendee of, Open Hearts, Open Minds, and Arts in Prison, which is something that goes into Columbia River Correctional Institution, put me in charge of their events. I was in charge of PSU's Masters of Fine Arts program, and that goes into the prison. I was appointed to lead their talent shows once or twice before my release, and always facilitated Liberation Literacy. I also was able to start, towards the end of my sentence, help start the first gender and sexuality class in the Oregon Department of Corrections. And that was started with a friend of mine named Jared at the time. And that took a really long time to get done, but we finally got that process done.
In the 4 years that you were at CRCI, did you find yourself kind of coalescing in a certain direction, or did you find that, like, your interests were developing around a common theme?
They started off kind of like being bitter towards the system, because I had taken my actual case to trial. I was convicted of burglary, and I had lost, even though there was no evidence that I had done anything, because I didn't, and so... kind of like spending a lot of my time angry and trying to figure out why. And then the rest of the time, once I started realizing how the system works and how it's set up, it's an extension of chattel slavery. And, you know, all they did was change the name plantation to prison and change the name slave to prisoner. And there's other things that are quite different, but they need that workforce, you know, to provide what capitalism is owed. And, this was an easy, free way for America to do it. And so once I started learning that type of thing, it was very easy for me to look past, you know, personal transgressions with the jury and the judge and the district attorney and the police and other things, and just understand that they were all kind of doing their job, and it allowed me to be more effective in educating people on that and going from there.
Would you say that this idea that you discovered, this kind of understanding of the system that you were living in, how did that tie into, for example, liberation literacy?
So in particular, once I found the reality of things like white privilege and how the system is intentionally disparate, it's not... Like my sentence of burglary, they gave me 5 years for a first offense, which is the maximum amount for a first offender from what I've heard. I knew I had friends that were darker skinned than I am get 3 times the length for the same exact crime or less. And so that type of thing started making me realize that if I have this privilege and this power, I need to do whatever I can to help in that regard, be of service in that regard, do something in that regard. And you know, liberation literacy was just one component of allowing a space and a community to grow in a place where it doesn't want it to. You know, guards don't like even light-skinned people and dark-skinned people to be together, because that means that we're in solidarity with one another and therefore a threat to them, to our captors. And so they don't really like us to mix in that way. And we kind of do that ourselves at times, just because it's easier to know who your friends are if prison politics says you have to protect these type of people. But that realization that there's so much work that needs to be done so everyone can be liberated and everyone can be free. And I had this power of articulation and like organizing and networking that allowed me to be effective in making things better in that place. And so I did whatever I could to do that.
So it sounds very much like being able to be part of a group like Liberation Literacy was almost, I think... perhaps a rebellion, but definitely something counter to the system that
Absolutely.
You were living in.
Yeah.
I'm really curious to know, how has that work, this work you talked about, like naming privilege, noticing this disparity, in what ways have you seen that either amplified or continued, like after your release?
Well, a lot of people, when they look at me, they don't assume that I've been to prison. And a lot of people that have the same skin color as me assume dark-skinned people have. And so that type of thing is always weird for me when I'm in spaces where we discuss, you know, prison and prison abolition and other things related to the prison industrial complex. And people talk differently to me than they do to people that I work with at Liberation Literacy, for example. And so it's a very strange thing to be assumed that I'm somehow better or good or, you know, in that way. And so I've found a lot, both in terms of the label as felon and being light-skinned, that it's just a strange interaction when I interact with other males, especially other white males, because they always assume I am like them. I'm non-binary, and I'm of a descendant of the Sami people of Norway, which aren't necessarily white, but I look like a white male. And sometimes that's the only way that other white people will hear me, is they assume that I'm like them. And so I use that to the best of my ability to continue the work.
So on that note, what are some of the avenues in which you've continued this work in this time?
I mean, like getting involved in living yoga, I had done that while I was doing time. And for over 3.5 years, I attended the Monday night yoga classes, which are held in Columbia River in the prison. And once I got out, I just felt like I needed to give back, because it was such a peaceful place. And it was a brief ceasefire in the violence that is prison, I once said. And, you know, I wanted to try to help give that to other people. And just continuing the work of my other things, like All Rise magazine has an issue set to be published around the holidays this year, and all of the content is created by prisoners or people who have done time, or at least volunteers who've gone in. And that type of work, I've done my best to make sure that it's streamlined, and I try to do anything I can to help with that process. Liberation literacy, I've spoken at Reed College with my executive director, Jarell Lambert, and we've gone to multiple events together and done a lot of things together. And the strategy team of the Metropolitan Alliance for Common Good is kind of more broad, but there's still a focus on, reaching and offering service to the community of formerly imprisoned people. And being the president of the board of Phoenix Rising Transitions, they still go into Columbia River twice a week now, I believe. Sometimes it was once while I was doing time, but now it's twice. And just being on the board of that and having the experience that I do has been able to kind of focus and aid them in their work. And I think that is what's most meaningful to me, is being able to give back to the people who offered so much while I was there.
If you're just tuning in now, you're listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. I'm your host, Isabel Sinclair, and today I'm here with Joshua Wright talking about his experience both in Columbia River Correctional Institution and out afterwards. Joshua, if I could return to something you had mentioned about privilege and mm-hmm. about that the disparity, right? Or the way in which people treat you based on the way you look. So I'd wanted to ask, because a lot of what you described is also based on how people view us, right? Like the judgments people create based on that external appearance.
Yeah.
What do you think, in your opinion, what are some of the most effective tools we can use to combat that or to start changing those stereotypes?
I mean, a big thing in American culture is the media, how we kind of other people just in speech. For example, trigger words used by the news, inner city, troubled youth, things like that. Known felon, they use quite a bit. Armed and dangerous, things like that that are meant to either scare or make you uncomfortable or to make you feel a certain way about a certain type of person. And I mean, even on Facebook, there's a lot of memes that go around that are intended, they're not necessarily intended to other people, but that is an effect of them or a byproduct of them. Pictures that say, glorify violence, even in certain movies. And the main character is killing a lot of people and sometimes even committing acts of genocide, and it's seen as right because it's either an act of revenge or it's somehow they make it morally correct and honorable. But if you take the time to step back and think, like, how would this affect someone who is from that community, or how would this feel if I was from there, or do we know this person on the news? Like, how do we know that any of this is accurate? How do we know that these terms... just try to remember that they don't encompass a human being. No words or labels could ever describe and tell you who someone is. Just always remember that every single person you see is human, the same as you. They might not be as effective or articulate or intelligent or wealthy or something of that nature, but they're all 100% human, whatever they're dealing with. And so just stepping back before you post something on Facebook and saying, how would this affect somebody? Is it rooted in love, or is it rooted in hatred or, discomfort? Is it meant to scare, or is it meant to educate? Things like that, just taking the time, to know what you're doing and how you're affecting.
I really appreciate what you just said about, is this meant to educate or is it meant to scare?
Mm.
And I think this relates back to what we were talking about at the beginning of the show, even about this unintentional use of vocabulary that can inhibit other people or really just put them in boxes.
Yeah.
So thank you for that.
Of course. Yeah, I mean, I had an interaction on Facebook almost immediately preceding this where someone was saying that Donald Trump is an example of men, and this is a strange thing to discuss, but I mean, Donald Trump, I personally disagree with his entire administration, but it also doesn't mean that he is an example of a certain group of individual. He is the president of the United States, and a terrible one, in my opinion. But that doesn't mean that everyone that looks like him or even sometimes says what he says is the same as him. And so if we vilify an entire group of people, how does that help us, and how does that allow us to forgive, and how does it allow those people to grow if they are in some way distorted in their thinking or morality? You're not helping the problem by saying that they're the enemy, you know. Why are they the enemy? How did they come to these views? How did they get to these ideals? Try to focus on just the humanity in others and understanding rather than judging. And hopefully we'll all get somewhere someday.
So this might be an interesting question, and perhaps it doesn't have the sort of answer that maybe I might be expecting. But would you say that during your time in CRCI that these sorts of dichotomies were more visibly evident than they might have been before, or could you comment on that?
Like in terms of...
Like these judgments, these easily like categorizing people into groups.
Were they more evident in prison?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that's because... So we kind of segregate ourselves in prison. And like I said, it's more because of prison politics. There's like rules that say you kind of have to protect your own, right? That have been going around since I think prisons existed. But the staff and the guards make sure that that stays in place. Like we can get in trouble for like sitting in the wrong area of a chow hall that an officer says we shouldn't, you know? And if we are like too loud, for example, I was in Unit 1 at Columbia River for quite some time. I was also in Unit 6, but Unit 1 in particular was pretty noisy, and that's because it was an honor dorm, so you had to kind of earn, through good behavior, your ability to go there. And a lot of people were just trying to distract themselves from the reality of prison and having a lot of fun doing it. And every time we got too loud, that would bother either other people we were doing time with or in particular the guards. They would get upset that we were having too much fun, especially if it was, you know, multiple races and multiple groups of people, because like I said, I think that internally they understand that that is a threat if we're together, if we don't see those labels. And so they try to do their best to, you know, solidify what we kind of do when we get there is like you need to stay in your own place, right? You need to know your role. And that also happens in the classes and groups sometimes. Like you have to admit guilt as far as a lot of required programs. Like even though I wasn't guilty of what I did, I had to say that I am a burglar. You know, I steal things to progress in a program. And once you kind of separate people in that regard, everyone in the room's going to put you in this box of like, oh, I probably know how to steal things well. You know, I'm an effective person at probably picking locks, things of that nature. And that's not helpful. It doesn't do anything. It also doesn't do anything for the person saying it, even if it was true. To say that you are a criminal and you are a burglar, how is that helpful for anybody, you know? And so I think a lot of those are very misguided. Like their intention is you have to take responsibility for your actions, but why did someone feel the need to steal in the first place if that is, you know, correct in their charge? Why did people were so hungry that they had to steal a loaf of bread? Why were people so distraught and upset that they had to take drugs to numb themselves? Why aren't there programs that deal with those problems rather than making criminals and enemies out of the people that engage in them?
Do you see this level of issue in the criminal justice system, this level of really segregating people and focusing on their crimes, right? Focusing on what might be wrong with them. Do you see that as related in to what we were talking about earlier in terms of the kinds of assumptions that we make about people? Or do you see those as different kinds of work?
I think they're similar, you know, in some capacity.
Where would you say your focus lies right now?
In terms of like my work itself?
Yeah.
I mean, my main focus is kind of amplifying Phoenix, because there's so much kind of potential in Phoenix Rising Transitions. The main component of it, it's mentor leadership programming, and it's designed to teach you an alternative psychology, basically, to, you know, the traditional mindset of a program offered in prison. And a main thing that we do is what's called an intentional conversation. We sit down with someone from the outside that comes into the prison every week, and we share our side of whatever. There's a question that prompts it, and they listen, and then they get to, you know, share their side of it. And then we do a plenary, and we discuss what we heard the other person say. So it also involves active listening and other things, because you can't just say, well, this is what I said in my conversation. You have to say, you know, I had an intentional conversation with this person, and this is what I heard them say. And that type of humanization is, you know, really my main focus. I mean, a lot of the stuff, I'm always there for education and public speaking and anything that I do. But I think that that story is able to, if we make it broader, able to reach everyone and able to get underneath the layers that we put, all those labels that we've discussed.
So Joshua, we only have a couple minutes left, believe it or not. And I'd like to take this time to ask if there's anything else you'd want to share with our audience, our listeners today.
I just would like to thank everyone who's ever been involved in working towards prison abolition, including reform towards abolition. Like, anything you do that helps people of that community, anything you do, if you know a loved one who's doing time, if you've had someone in the past, reach out and know that, like, we care about you. Like, we want to hear from you. And all of the work that I do is focused on love. And so please don't ever forget that you can always offer love. It's free.
Thank you so much, Joshua. Thank you for being a guest on our show tonight.
You're welcome.
I would like to thank Selena, our board op, for helping us out. And for all of you who've tuned in to listen, you've been listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. I'm Isabel Sinclair, and Joshua and I have been speaking here tonight about some of the work that he's done in his time at Columbia River Correctional Institution and how that work has continued afterwards. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs on kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. You can also like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. Thanks again, and until next time.
You understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Native Artist and Storyteller Symposium on Saturday, October 26th from noon to 6 p.m. at the PSU Native American Student and Community Center in Portland. The Native Artist and Storyteller Symposium will feature artist talks and presentations by Native artists, a panel discussion, a community meal, an artist marketplace, and more. Again, that's the Native Artist and Storyteller Symposium on Saturday, October 26th from noon to 6 p.m. at the PSU
Native American Student and Community Center, 710 Southwest Jackson Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Muertos PDX Dia de los Muertos celebration on Friday, November 1st and Saturday, November 2nd from 4 to 9 p.m. at St. Andrew Catholic Church in Portland. This two-day event celebrates the ancient tradition of welcoming back loved ones who have passed on. There will be altar building, Muertos face painting, sugar skull decorating, traditional Mexican food, drink, and live musical performances. It's a benefit for Transiciones, a program at Mount Hood Community College that has helped Latino women for close to 20 years in reaching their academic and career goals. Again, that's a Muertos PDX Dia de los Muertos celebration on Friday, November 1st and Saturday, November 2nd from 4 to 9 p.m. at St. Andrew Catholic Church, 806 Northeast Alberta Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You're listening to KBOO, Portland, Oregon. The time now is 7 o'clock. Stay tuned for Hard Knock Radio.
Peace, y'all. This is Big Guru, Gifted Unlimited Rhymes Universal, in the house right now on Hard Knock Radio, okay, baby?
This is Dolores Huerta, and this is Hard Knock Radio.
I am Elizabeth Petita Martinez here with Hard Knock Radio.